I went into a doctor's surgery, which had stayed open late for me that night, and they took one look at my toe and the doctor said, "I'm sorry, but it's over."
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast. I really appreciate the time you've given to talk to me today. Last week, I talked to my friend Brad Beer, who answered your questions about injuries. It was quite the episode, and if you're ever worried about how you should know whether to run through an injury or to stop, this is what you need to listen to. I know you love the inspirational stories, those everyday heroes who accomplish mind-blowing things, and today I have a very special one for you. I'm hoping by the end of this episode you will believe that you too can do something that right now seems impossible. And I mean that. Today I'm talking to David Alley, better known as the man who completed the races around Australia. Yeah, you heard that right. He went around the edge of Australia multiple times to become the first person to ever cycle and run around the country. It is quite the story, and I know you're going to finish up this today feeling very inspired. But before we meet Dave, let's take a quick word from our sponsor. Multiple studies have proven running with music helps to improve performance. I have become addicted to my Jabra Pulse sport headphones, using them for almost every easy run, but shh, don't tell my coach. You will love these earbuds too, and you can enter to win a free set every month by visiting jabra.com/runnersconnect. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Dave.
Well, hi. How are you, Tina? Thank you.
Oh, I'm doing well, and thank you for being the one to come on the show today. So today we're going to hear a little more about you and some of these incredible feats that you have accomplished for good causes. But first, I want to learn maybe a little more about your background. So you are a family man. You've been an endurance athlete for years, doing Ironmans and marathons. But can you kind of share your previous running journey, maybe up to 2011?
Okay, well, I guess the ultra endurance world really started for me back in 2008 when I did my first Ironman, and that was a challenge in itself for me. I guess prior to that, I'd never done anything in the endurance world, and to take something on like that for me was huge.
Wait, so you'd never even done a marathon?
No.
Oh, wow.
No.
You jumped right up.
I sure did. And I guess for me, it was a real turning point in my life in that I had twins that were born 3 months prematurely, and things were really touch and go for them. And I felt once they'd got out of hospital and got through that danger period that I wanted to do a thank you. And I wasn't comfortable just leaving the hospital and saying thank you and leaving it at that. I wanted to do something to give back to them. And I thought, well, what's the toughest one-day challenge there is? And I thought it has to be an Ironman mm-hmm. triathlon. And at that stage, I didn't own a bike. I went down to the local pool. I swam a lap and almost drowned and thought, you've got a long way ahead. And it really started from there for me, this journey. And I got a coach, and I got into it, and I just loved it. And things really went from there. I did Ironman in 2008 here in Australia, and the journey started for me.
So how at that point did you not, you know, you said you began by, you know, you didn't have a bike and you began by just one lap of the pool, but how did that not, you know, completely overwhelm you, or was there points like that? I just can't imagine, like, that's incredible that you were able to go from zero to seeing something that huge, like such a big mountain. How did you overcome the doubts?
It was a huge challenge, and I guess excuse me, for me, that the thing that I guess lured me to it and attracted me to such an event was that it was so tough, and it was something that for me particularly was so unrealistic. And I think the key to it for me was, first and foremost, was to be in the right mindset. And once I was in that right mindset and believed in myself and believed that this could come true, I think the physical aspects of it came from there. And I never really looked at the overall goal as such. I really broke it down into sizable chunks. And things for me when I first started, even doing a 40-kilometre ride, I was so excited that I could get through that distance. And I look back now and laugh. But it really was starting from literally from scratch and just making it just step by step.
So when you said about breaking it down, how did you figure out how you could do that without like any kind of previous experience? Did you get that coach right away, or was it just kind of trial and error?
It was a lot of trial and error, and learning from experience, I think, was a lot at the start. And when I was at, again, still at a very basic level, I felt I needed a coach and needed that level of support. Especially taking on something like this, I think it was, you just can't afford to go into it half-hearted, something of that size. So when I got a coach, I guess I just built on that self-belief, and we set just little challenges along the way and little goals. And like anything of this nature, there were certainly our ups and downs. There were tough times throughout there, but the goal was always in mind.
Mm-hmm. And then when you completed that first Ironman, was that kind of a realization that you could do anything you put your mind to, or do you think you'd already reached that point during your journey that you were going to do this?
Look, I think at that stage the goal was just to do the Ironman, and that was it for me. But I felt as soon as I crossed the finish line, I had that feeling like I had another challenge left within me, and I guess I was bitten by the endurance bug at that stage. And it wasn't long after that I was looking for something else to take on.
Yeah, okay, so then let's go into that. So for those people who do not know about your first race around Australia, you raised $30,000 for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But do you want to tell us exactly about that experience, what you did, and how that kind of came about?
Sure. I guess for me, Tina, how that came about was my best mate and I, we sat down and he was in the same thought pattern as I was, and we both agreed that we wanted to achieve something big before we turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
And time was ticking away. And so we sat down together and we tossed around several ideas, and the idea of the cycle was born. And with that, initially, we'd planned that I would cycle up to 100 kilometres a day. We'd raise money for a charity that was linked to our occupations, mine of policing, and my best mate is a school principal. And from that, I commenced training, and he was very much into the logistical side of things, and the planning was his background and what his passion was, where mine was more the physical aspect. So it was a good partnership, I guess you could say, in that regard. And what we did was we went to the University of Queensland. A friend suggested we go there and ask for some advice, which we did. And the university were terrific and came on board and offered to do some testing and work with their students. And we did that initial testing, and the results came back, and I got a phone call from the head of sports science there that said, look, the results have come back a lot better than we thought. Do you know if there's a record for such a journey? And my best mate, he's also Dave, to confuse things, he went away and did some research and came back to me and said, I'll dangle the carrot first and say that there's no Australians in the top five. There is a record. There's no Australians in the top five.
Oh, however, I just want to pause you a second and say, for those who haven't figured it out yet, this is a race all the way around the edge of Australia. So keep going.
my friend came back with the details and said, look, the record's held by a Canadian. And mm-hmm. I said, look, if someone could cycle 14,000 kilometres and average 200 kilometres a day, I don't think that could be beaten. And he came back with the news that the Canadian guy, Perry Stone, had done the journey in 41 days and 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and he'd averaged over 340 kilometres a day. So on hearing that news, we laughed at each other and went back to plan A, which was to ride the 100 kilometres a day and raise awareness and funds for a charity. However, I guess that's where things really changed. And I went home and I sat down and thought about it and really broke the journey down. And I had some contact with Perry, and he said to me that he averaged around 25 kilometres an hour and rode for 15 hours a day. And I didn't look at that as a negative. I really took that as a positive. And I thought, okay, well, I can ride at 25 kilometres an hour. There's no way I can do that for 15 hours. But I went away and I just kept breaking that down, and I went out and I rode for 25 kilometres for an hour. And I thought, okay, I've done that for 1 hour. And then I gradually increased my training, and it really went from there until a point in 2011, we had some quite horrific floods over here where a number of people lost their lives, and it's a really tough period up in Brisbane in Queensland in January. And we had a five-day trial set down for that time. And we went ahead with the trial. We had to change our course and other things, but we had a minimum of 100 millimetres of rain every day for those 5 days, and conditions were couldn't get any tougher.
Wow, yeah.
But I came back from that 5 days and really gained a lot of confidence, because I thought conditions will never be as tough as this on the journey. So we set then another challenge of completing 10 days as a trial. So we went ahead and did a 10-day trial. And I came back from that trial ahead of world record pace. And that's when I think, not only with me, but also the team I had around me, this belief came about that, hang on a minute, this can actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we changed focus and we said, okay, well, look, let's do it. Let's have a go at this record. And we did. And I came back in 37 days, 20 hours and 45 minutes. And look, we took just over 3 days off the record and proved that it could be done.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was incredible. Not just did you complete it, which was, like you said, just over 14,000 K or over 8,800 miles. But you shattered the record by 3 days. So, you know, how long of a time period was this from when you first kind of heard about, I guess, discovered it, and to when you actually like went for it and started it? How long did you actually train for?
It was about a 3-year process from start to finish. So as I said, yeah, starting basically from scratch. I guess having the Ironman behind me was a big boost, and I had that base endurance level, but certainly not to that level.
Yeah. And so when you were going along, you know, you said that earlier that you kind of broke it down very well, and, you know, that to do it over 3 years and to build up to that kind of level, you must have some special ways that you've been able to break this up in your mind and kind of, you know, during those tough days where it just seemed like this is an incredible feat that, you know, how can I do? And I'm sure you must have at some point doubted yourself. How did you kind of stay positive and believe that, you know, this could be accomplished during those moments? Because I'm sure a lot of runners listening right now have that thing where they, you know, they have a big goal that sounds way too ambitious, but, you know, someday they believe somewhere deep down that they can get there, but it just seems just so insurmountable right now.
Yes, look, I think each and every day, you know, if you ask when did I doubt myself during training and during the actual event, it was every day, to be honest. Each and every day there was some point where I had those dark periods and I thought, you know, this can't be done. What am I doing out here? This is silly. You need to go home. What's the point of all of this? All those thoughts went through my head at different stages during the day. But I guess during training and during the event itself, having such a great support crew behind me, and a group of people that did believe in me. There were so many that said it can't be done, and I was mad just to even take it on.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had my small core group of true believers, I call them, that did stick by me, and that group gradually grew. And I had that feeling that I can't let them down. People had invested a lot of time, a lot of money and belief in me, and I just always thought about them, and I thought about my kids at home, and having those thoughts in my mind took the idea of quitting out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that for me, quitting just wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm. So you think that actually, you know, during those real struggles, you take the focus off yourself and kind of this pity party that you're having for yourself and think about other people. I've heard of people doing that, and I've done it a few times in marathons, those last few miles, dedicating them to someone. But you'd say that works very well, taking the kind of focus off you and more onto the other people that have helped you along your journey.
Most definitely. Look, I think all those, and I'm sure yourself included, that are into endurance sport, we have those periods, no matter what our event or how long it is, where we doubt ourselves. And if you've got that something else or someone else you can draw on and take the focus off yourself and the pain and what you're going through, mm-hmm. it really gets you to that finish line.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's great advice. Thank you. And then, so did you, when you finished that race, you know, I can't even imagine the elation you must have felt as you crossed that finish line, but did you ever imagine at the time that there could be anything harder than that? Did you, at that moment, did you feel there was another challenge in there, or was it at that time, it was like, I'm done. I've done everything I need to do.
Yes, I did. When I finished, I thought that would be it. I was done. I was physically spent,
also
mentally and emotionally, yeah. I was just completely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also glad it was that way, because I always said that my goal was, regardless of the record was great and fantastic, but it was more important for me to cross that finish line knowing that I had no fuel left in the tank. I guess that was more important to me. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I was. So that was the thing I was most proud of, was finishing the bike and being completely exhausted and knowing that I'd given up my all was a great feeling of satisfaction. But, look, I don't think it took very long. Within a month or two,
oh wow,
my mind was already thinking of, you know, look, what's next?
Uh-huh. So then, all right, you're leading me into these perfects. So 3 years later, you began your race around Australia too, becoming the first person to do both when you completed the, if correct me if I'm wrong, over 13,000 kilometres or over 8,000 miles. So do you want to kind of tell us about that journey? And, you know, you only completed this recently, so this one's very fresh in your mind.
It is. Look, I think the basic principles applied when coming up with the second race around Australia. Early on, the idea of the run came forward. And again, I sat down with my best mate who was managing the trip, and we tossed around a few ideas, and the idea of the run came up. And it was basically the same format, except this time I was running instead of cycling, and that we looked at it, we found out what the record was, we thought, it's ridiculous, no one can do that. And again, we came home, we sat down, and I just broke it down into step by step. And the run was certainly a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
People often say that, or said to me early on, well, you know the course this time, so that's got to be to your advantage. But I think it was the other way. On the bike, because I hadn't been around Australia in over 14,000 kilometres, I didn't know what to expect. And on the run, I knew what was ahead of mm-hmm. me. I knew what the tough sections would be. But again, I broke it down into step by step. And I think it was also a lot tougher because just physically, my body had adapted to cycling. And I had some scans done when I got back from the cycle. And a doctor, a specialist in bones, had said to me, your body is actually reformed and even your bone structure is reformed just to cycle.
Wow.
And I found that adapting to running was very hard. I thought it would be simple because I was more of a runner than a cyclist before the cycle. And I really struggled early on for about 12 to 18 months when I started running again. I really battled with stress fractures and a lot of lower limb injuries adapting back to running. And the advice I was given was that it would be about a two-year period and to adapt to running again and strengthen my body up for that. And, mm-hmm. and it was spot on, really. It was about a two-year process to be back on track to be able to run.
Mm-hmm. And so did you said about, you know, seeing these physicians, did they encourage you to do this? Or I would imagine most people would be like, don't do this, this is, you know, damaging to you? Were people generally supportive in the medical industry?
They were. Again, I used basically the same medical team that I had for the cycle, which I think was an advantage in that they knew my body and what I was capable of. And, yeah, I did get some strange looks when I came in with the initial idea that I would run it. And often the response I got was, there's a reason why no one has cycled and run. And that was the adaptation of the body to be able to take on the stresses of running versus cycling. But look, generally they were supportive, and once they knew my mind was made up, they were right behind me.
Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm sure this is quite a eye-opening thing for a number of reasons, this interview, but you talked about having stress fractures and you talked about, you know, your body kind of adapting. So do you have any thoughts or any advice for people who, you know, maybe are in that stage, maybe they've just started running and they keep getting injuries or keep getting those fractures, to kind of persevere with it and, yeah, take it a little bit slower and, you know, slow down on your easy runs and, you know, do all the things that we at Runners Connect recommend all the time? But do you have any specific advice for kind of this persevering during that transition phase, especially if someone's never done any kind of activity?
Sure. I think that the best advice I can give, particularly for runners, is patience. I think that's the number one piece of advice. Is people often start and they're very enthusiastic and want to get out there and get into it, which is fantastic. But I think that has to be, there has to be a measured approach and very controlled approach in that. And patience is the key. And I found that with me, to cover the distances I was, is that I had to reduce my pace by about 2/3. So it was very frustrating, particularly early on. And changing my gait and the way I ran to more of a shuffle, I think was a big learning curve for me. So I think, look, particularly new people starting out, is that you need that level of enthusiasm and motivation to get out there and do it, but do it in a controlled fashion, and don't be afraid to seek advice from coaches and also from podiatrists and physios and those in the medical world, and take on that advice and use that to move forward.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm glad you mentioned about changing your running form. And I know we have a running form course, which I will put a link to the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC102. You know, you can check that out. But, you know, this, so during this transition time, you trained for it, you were ready for it, and you know, you decided to do it for a cause related to depression, as 1 million, I think on a video I watched of you, 1 million Australians are diagnosed every year. Why did you feel this was such the cause that you wanted to do this for?
Look, I think the White Cloud Foundation was a great link to what we were doing, and in that, I guess the ultra endurance athlete, and particularly the runner, it's seen as a solo pursuit, and you spend so much time out on the road on your own and training by yourself. And people with depression can often feel that way as well. And we wanted to draw that link that although I was out there on my own and running on my own, it took a whole team of people to get me in that position and support me and get me through it. And the same can be said for depression and anxiety, where people, you know, there's support networks and family and friends and people out there that will support you and help you through it. And there's always been a stigma, I guess, involved, particularly with men and mental illness and mental health and depression. And we wanted to try and break down some of those barriers. And as I made my way around the country, speak to people and listen to their stories and I guess in some way try and inspire and motivate them to come out and speak more about it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And I never would have thought about the correlation there, but it is so true, especially, you know, with the kind of negative thoughts we have and the kind of down on yourself feelings when you are running and in a struggle like that. So that's, you know, that's fantastic. So let's talk a bit more about the crew or the team that you've mentioned a few times now. How many people are we talking about here? Do you want to maybe share some of the most, I don't know if you could say the most important, but some of the ones that were there? Maybe the most.
Yes, look, I had between 4 to 5 support crew with me at any one time. We took 2 support vehicles. So how we worked or structured each day was we had a a camper van style car that followed me basically throughout the day. And what they would do is they would leapfrog and go ahead 5 to 7 kilometres at a time. And I would catch up to them, have my nutrition, have my fluids and carry on, and they would move on to the next stop. And vehicle two, we had a four-wheel drive and a caravan, and they would often go 20 to 30 kilometres ahead at a time. And then as the day wore on, they'd go and look for a place for us to pull over on the side of the road or a campsite or somewhere. And coupled with that was the crew. So we often had two in each vehicle, which we thought was important, not only for a morale side of things, but also in terms of driver fatigue and and those things as well. So that's how we structured each day. And look, with as far as crew goes, we had my father and Dave, the manager, his father came along. So that was great for us. And they're retired. So I guess being on the road for 6 months is such a huge ask of anyone to give up that amount of time, and to do so unpaid as well was a huge commitment. So that was a great motivating force for me to have both those men come along with us for the entire journey. And I guess some more of the key people that we had come along was a sports dietitian travelled throughout the whole journey with me, which was terrific. And I guess coupled with that, we've also had my wife came in and out at various points around the country as well, which was a huge boost to me. So everyone had their specific roles. We also had I had a podiatrist fly in and out as I went up through Darwin. We also had a chiropractor flew in and out. So and amongst those, we also had other specialists come out, physios, chiropractors, masseuses came out and treated me on the side of the road where and when we could. So it really was a big team effort.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, it just shows how you were able to build this, like, community around you and, you know, those people, you have them fly in and out. I bet that, you know, made a huge difference when you were in those struggling times. And I'm imagining that you must have met some incredible people along your journey as, you know, the attention grew and as people kind of realised what you were doing. So do you want to maybe share some of the people you met? I mean, I read about Lizzie. Maybe you could start with her and then maybe a few others.
Yeah, sure. Lizzie was an amazing lady that we ran to along the way. And we first came across Lizzie on the Northern Territory, Western Australia border. We camped literally on the border one night. It was late at night and the crew had gone ahead to find us a spot. And there's some border gates there to check fruit and vegetables and things. So the guys got pulled up there and got talking to the guards and they were quite supportive of what we were doing and offered us a space across from them to camp for the night. And the guys took that offer up. And while they were setting up camp, a little old lady came across and she was lucky to be 5 feet tall. And they got talking and she was there on her own. And then she shared her story. And look, Lizzie was 76 years of age and it was her fifth trip where she flies into Darwin and cycles all the way to Perth.
Wow.
So just an amazing journey. Yeah. And she does it on her own each year and rides along the national highway, the A1, just her bike and a little trolley she pulls behind us. And just an amazing lady. And over the next few days, we managed to share a lot of experiences together and I guess the part of the journey together. And it was just to have her there was amazing. We formed this really strong bond. And look, after about two or three days, it was obvious that we were going to skip ahead of her and she wanted to have a rest day. And we'd come into a small town and she said that she pulled me aside and I looked up and she had tears flowing down her Aww. Cheeks and just said, it was just amazing to spend a few days with you and share your journey. And look, we've kept in touch ever since.
Oh, so that's wonderful.
Just one of the people of many that made the trip just so worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. And were you kind of surprised by how many people, you know, how people kind of rallied behind you by the end of this? I mean, you know, just looking at your Facebook page, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, you know, you've got so much support around you and companies and people. Did you ever imagine you would get this much kind of momentum behind you?
Not at all. No. Particularly when we got back from the cycle, I was just really overwhelmed with the support that people had shown me, and then it followed on, and not only followed on, but it's grown tenfold again with the run. And look, as you said, the sponsors and the people that have got behind me, and I guess as the journey unfolded, it was very much like the cycle in that it started and people over here in Australia said, this guy's crazy and it can't happen. And, you know, why is he doing this? It's ridiculous. He's never going to make it. And even we had some doctors over here that said, what you're trying to achieve is physically impossible. It can't be done. And look, we had people come out each and every day that ran with me or drove beside or came out on bikes and followed the journey. And it really was. It was just overwhelming. And look, even up in the top end of Queensland, it hadn't rained up there for 3.5 years. And we had farmers come out on the side of the road who had followed it and came out to say hello and share their experiences and the tough times they were going through and how the community was affected by depression and anxiety. So aww. It was great to hear their stories. But as you say, it's look, if someone said to me 10 years ago, you'd have the level of support that I do now and the people behind me, I would have laughed at it because it just wouldn't have seemed real. But no, it's what keeps me going. It really is.
Yeah, and it's fantastic to see. And I definitely encourage people to go check out David's Facebook page, which I will put a link to the show notes. So then, you know, you've kind of mentioned it just there, but undoubtedly there was some real lows during that time. You know, some moments you just didn't think you were going to make it, or some real struggles. Do you want to maybe share a few of those and how you made it through those tough parts?
Yes, as you say, Tina, look, it was tough. The run took a lot more out of me physically than even I think it was going to. Each and every day I had real battles. Look, in the build-up I didn't have any issues really with blistering, and 2 weeks into the trip my feet were literally covered in blisters to the point where even to walk was a struggle, and every single step was pain. Every step of the day was tough. And look, I'm not afraid to admit it, that I had days early on where I spent the day in tears as I went along the road. It was that tough physically, and I was thinking, how am I going to continue? And look, I guess the real pivotal point of the whole trip was almost at the exact halfway point. And we were 130 kilometres from Port Hedland in the top of WA. And as I said, it was almost exactly halfway through the trip. And I started with what I thought was an ingrown toenail. And it gradually got worse over a few days, and to the point where it was causing me considerable pain. And the support vehicle came up beside me and asked, was I okay? And I didn't know what I was going to do first, whether I was going to throw up or pass out. I was in that much pain. Wow. And we sat down for a moment, took the shoe off, and we took some photos of the wonders of modern technology. We took some photos of the toe and sent it through to my doctor on the east coast of Australia, who said, look, I think you've got a major infection. You need to get to a hospital ASAP. And, of course, these things happen in the most remote locations.
Yeah.
So we left the four-wheel drive in the caravan at the spot where I'd stopped, and they set up camp, and we shot off into it was about an hour's drive, hour and a half drive into the closest city, which was Port Hedland. And I went into a doctor's surgery, which had stayed open late for me that night, and they took one look at my toe and the doctor said, I'm sorry, but it's over. You can't carry on. It's you have a severe infection in your toe, and if that spreads through your body, which it's already started to, and gets into your vital organs, you could be dead within 8 hours.
Wow.
So it got to that point, and look, it was tough. It was, you know, even at that point, though, I never considered stopping or quitting. I was asking a lot of questions and seeing what the alternatives were. And look, we came up with a plan, and reluctantly the doctor let me go that night, and we headed back to camp. And I had some antibiotics and drugs to heal up the infection. And the next day I had the toe operated on, and I had the toenail removed, and it tidied up a little bit. And for the next week I was on painkillers and antibiotics to clear it. And look, it cleared and I carried on. But I guess to go with that was the fact that to maintain the record, the integrity of the record, I had to run a minimum of 20 kilometres each and every day. And if I didn't make that 20 kilometres, it was all over. So in the back of my mind was the pressure of that as well, and trying to break the record, which I'd worked so hard to do. And mm-hmm. even to get to that point, I was 4 to 5 days ahead of record pace, and I was literally seeing the record go before me. And mm-hmm. I was about 250 kilometres ahead in terms of distance, and I lost that within 3 to 4 days, and I was cutting back to running marathons a day for 4 to 5 days to try and rest the toe as much as I could. And look, after that 4 to 5 days, I was able to pick up my pace and get up around that 80 kilometres a day again and push on.
Wow, the fact that you just said you have to cut back to running a marathon even with that going on, it's just blows my mind. But, that's the true example of, you know, a moment when most people probably would have said, okay, I'm done. Like, you know, that would have been a real risk, but that just shows your perseverance. You used problem solving to figure out a way you could get around this and not give up hope. I mean, it's incredibly inspiring, Dave. And I don't think I would have accomplished it myself had that situation come up. So this is just amazing. So I bet it made the finish even sweeter. So do you want to share with us that final, maybe the final stretch and crossing the finish?
Yeah, look, the finish line was amazing. I guess it's hard to describe, but we had two finish lines in effect, because the first person to ever do the race around Australia, the run, was a guy by the name of Ron Grant, who did it in 1983.
Wow.
And Ron completed a distance of 13,383 kilometres. So that then became the benchmark, I guess, mm-hmm. Or the finish line of such an event. And for me, with our distances and the change of roads and diversions around towns and cities now, I was going to have to run another 400 kilometres to get home. So I'd promised myself and my crew and family that before I left that I wouldn't stop at that mark. I would continue and do the extra 400 kilometres and get home and complete the full loop, so to speak. So we had two celebrations, I guess. And another amazing story that's come from this was 2 or 3 days before I got to that magic 13.383 mark, Ron Grant, the man himself, turned up.
Oh, wow.
Unannounced, and had made the journey in the car, now in his 70s, Ron. And I guess in the build-up, I'd spoken to Ron quite a few times and been to his home, and we developed a bond, Ron and I, and a friendship. And the level of sportsmanship and friendship that he shown me and mateship was just remarkable. He wanted me to do this and wanted me to finish, and to have him and his wife there. I got past that magic figure at 10 to 2 in the morning. I'd normally finish about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, but I was so close to that record mark that I wanted to do it. And look, he came out with his wife, and we shared a very special moment on the side of the National Highway at 10 to 2 in the morning. And I guess from there I thought for me that it just the emotion and adrenaline would kick in to get me through that last 400 kilometres, but it didn't turn out that way. I found it really tough once I'd got past, I guess, the official record. To then carry on was tough mentally, and coupled with that, it was also the toughest part of the course.
Okay.
A lot of hills and mountains to climb in that last 400 kilometres, so it was very tough that last week to push on and finish, but to do so, and look, I'll never ever forget that feeling of running into a packed ground of well wishers and supporters that had cheered me on was just impossible to put in words the feeling that I have, and to cross the finish line with my four kids and my wife was really, really special.
And what was the official time, or I guess number of days, for those who do not know?
Good question. Now I'm struggling to remember, but it was 175 days, 4 hours, and I think 49 minutes from memory to cover that. And it was a total of 13,791 kilometres.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And, you know, understandably, you were featured in all kinds of online and print publications such as Runner's World, and just all over the kind of a viral thing all over the internet. And actually, a friend who listens to the podcast actually was the one to recommend you, because she was so incredibly inspired by you and your story. And I'd kind of heard a little bit about it, but you know, this was a great reminder. So how was it kind of becoming this almost overnight celebrity, in a way, of, you know, people just following you and wanting to feature you and talk to you? I bet that was did you ever expect that?
I didn't, no. It was never the plan. And I guess it's hard for me, because I just see myself as Dave Alley. I'm not anyone special. The only difference really is that we all have dreams, we all have goals, but I guess I just took that one extra step and actually said, you know what, I'm just going to have a go and see what happens. And win, lose or draw, I'm going to come home and I'm going to know that I've given my best. And it really was overwhelming. And to have people, you know, come down in the street and say hello and recognize what I've done, and the messages of support I've received from people I've never met has been really fantastic. And it just inspires me to get out there more and want to achieve more.
So when you said at the beginning that you finished that first Ironman and you still had another challenge in you, is there another challenge still in there?
Look, I think there is. I'd like to think there is. My wife probably would like to think I should retire from all this crazy stuff. But, look, I think there is. I want to achieve more. I feel as though I've got more to offer. I'm still recovering, I guess, physically from the run. It's been tough, and it was a big ask of my body. But look, my mind's ticking over, and I'm thinking of, you know, there's other things out there for me to achieve.
Oh, we'll be interested to follow along, and I definitely encourage people to do that. What would be the best way for people to find you? Is it through your Facebook page or your website? I can put both of those on the show notes, but how would you like people to stay in touch?
Yes, look, we put regular updates on what's happening, and look, the Facebook page is probably the best way to go at David Alley Race Around Australia. Mm-hmm. So, look, we're updating people there regularly, and I've started a new business, a health and fitness business now with my wife. So we're incorporating that into what we're doing, and really excited about the future.
Yeah, that is awesome. Very congratulations for that. And then just finally, before we begin our final kick round, what would you like to say to others listening to encourage them to try and do something unique or, you know, unimaginable, something that just seems so out of their realm of possibility right now, but something that can be accomplished? Do you have any words of advice?
Look, I think the best advice I can give is to believe in yourself. It's amazing what you can achieve. And it's if I hadn't done this, I wouldn't have believed it myself, but it really is amazing what the human body can achieve if you ask it to do so. You really can do things, and it doesn't have to be physical things. You know, you might have grown up and wanted to play the piano and you've never taken that step and there's always been reasons why, then just go and do it. Just go out there and do it, and don't die wondering. I think a big thing for me was, well, two things that I was told by a prominent sports psychologist, and one was the rocking chair test. And that is, you know, when you're 85 and you're in a nursing home and sitting on your rocking chair and looking back at your life, don't be disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know, go out there. You'll be more disappointed in the things that you haven't at least attempted. Don't be afraid to attempt things, because you'll never know what you can actually achieve. And I guess the biggest thing that I was told that has stuck with me always has been the 0-30-70 rule. And that was a sports psychologist again said to me that, look, Dave, when you think you're at rock bottom and you have zero left in the tank, there's nothing left, you're at that point at, you know, the 35-kilometre mark in the marathon and you just don't think you can push on, then you've only actually used 30% of what you're capable of, which is amazing. It's just a mechanism in your brain, as I guess firing a warning, but it does that at 30%. So that means that whatever we're doing, we still have 70% left in the tank, which is huge. And that really stuck with me. And I thought, imagine if we only dug 10% of that and used 10% of that extra of what we're capable of, how much we could change all aspects of our life. So that was the thing that really stuck with me. And I think the 0-30-70 is something that we can apply to all areas of our life.
Absolutely. That's incredible. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Okay, we're just about to begin our final kick round, but I just want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. Some days we need all the motivation we can get to make sure we finish our workout or make it through that cross-training session, especially when we're trapped indoors. It has been well documented that running with music or a motivating podcast can help improve performance. But as much as I love the idea, I found myself getting frustrated with the cords getting in my way, or when they would rip out of the treadmill. Finally, I have a solution. Jabra Pulse is a sweatproof, weatherproof, wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speeds. Even better, it has an accurate in-ear heart rate monitor that quickly connects to your phone so you can ditch the chest strap. The earbuds will have a secure and comfortable fit thanks to the ability to customize the earpieces. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. All right, and Dave, we are now here for the final kick round. So first, I want to ask you, this may be a tough one, what the greatest advice you've ever received was. Maybe it was that, what you just mentioned.
Yes, I think it was. I think it was, yeah, the 0-30-70 rule and that self-belief.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Okay, do you have a favourite book or blog?
I'm a big fan. It has to be a true story for me. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of true stories and people who have gone out and done different things and achieved different things. So anything along those lines, mm-hmm. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, there's plenty of those out with lots of inspiration. Okay, what would you like to tell a new runner?
A new runner? I would first of all say congratulations and enjoy the road ahead. And I guess there's so many different events and styles of running out there now, and just find what clicks with you and motivates you to get out there and do it. And I think just get out and enjoy it, and don't worry about being nervous or worried about what's out there. Just get out and enjoy it, mm-hmm. and make the most of it.
Yeah, I love that. Definitely. That's great advice there. And really, you know, what should be the heart of running is enjoying it. So that's really helpful. Okay, your favorite pre-running, or I don't know if we would say pre-race typically, but maybe something you ate along the journey that just really seemed to sit well and you had quite a lot of?
Oh, I'm a sweet tooth. I shouldn't say that, but I am.
Sorry, I am too.
I'm a big chocolate fan. But it's funny you should mention that, because one thing that I ate daily, more than daily, was bananas. And now that I've got back from the run, I can't even look at a banana.
So fed up of them. Yeah, I can imagine it, across something like that, you've become so incredibly sick of something. So bananas are your food, but not for the time being. Maybe in the future they'll make a comeback. Okay, and finally, your favorite running product, or maybe a few running products that you used along the way that got you through?
Oh, yes. Very good question. Oh, I like my Brooks runners, my Brooks Adrenaline runners. Mm-hmm. They've been great for me, and love the product. And apart from that, I think doing the run and doing it in Australia was anything that can help me cool down. So my cooling cap, those sort of neck wraps, anything of that sort of thing, particularly here in Australia with the harsh, hot conditions where my best friends on my trip, that's for sure.
Absolutely. No, wasn't even thinking about the heat in this, but I'm sure that added a whole nother element to it that we don't even have time to discuss, but that will have to be a one for the future when we come back, when you've done your next greatest challenge. So well, Dave, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this, and I know our listeners have gathered a lot of inspiration from this, as I have. So thank you so much for your time and congratulations on what you've achieved.
Thank you. It's been great to talk to you, Tina.
It's funny, most of us end up looking at the mountain ahead of us for our goals and see all the challenges we'll have to overcome, how far we have to go, but really we should be more like Dave, looking at it day by day, step at a time. Hopefully you're as inspired as I am after that, and I'd love to hear what challenge you decided to set yourself, and I promise to help you stay accountable if you let me know. You can either tweet them at me, at Tina Muir, or you can email me if you want to keep them personal, which is tina@runnersconnect.net. And also remember, you can email me any suggestions you have for guests, anyone that you'd like to hear from, or ways to improve. Today's guest was actually a recommendation by someone, so I do listen. If you enjoyed today's episode or any other episode, please consider leaving a review about the podcast. I give you all the instructions you need, along with other podcast related information, on our podcast page, which I will put a link to in the show notes, which are at runnersconnect.net/RC104. And remember, you can enter to be one of 5 winners of Brad Beer's book, You Can Run Pain Free. I will also put a link to that in the show notes. Next week, we are going to be talking about diabetes and running. I used to believe that I could eat as much sugar as I wanted, but boy was I wrong. You are not going to want to miss these guests. This is an eye opener for sure. Until then, have a great week.